Thanks for downloading the Overdrive podcast. If you're on Instagram, make sure you follow us at TSN1050. If you're not, sign up and follow us, even if it's the only account that you follow. Because if you're a big fan of the show, you've got to know what's going on behind the scenes. On Instagram, at TSN1050.
Never filtered. Always fun.
0%. Okay. Don Gorski will not eat 40,000 hamburgers.
This is a 15-year Jerry. So
you know, oh, I know that. He said 14 years, I believe. Okay. Every 14 years, yeah, he hits 10 grand.
So 14 years from now.
This show will not last 14 years.
There's a 0% chance of that.
This is Overdrive with Hayes, Noodles, and the O-Dog on TSN 1050.
Richard Griffin from The Star will join us in a few minutes. Bob McKenzie in studio later in the hour. The O-Dog is overdoing a SportsCenter hit. Game 2 tonight in Winnipeg. So he will be back. Bobby Mack will be back. And this is a big opportunity for Winnipeg. Like,
yeah,
I love the scene out there. They're saying 20,000 people, 30,000 people. I think it's getting to a point where hyperbole is being used here. Like, it can't be factual. You know, you hear those stories. Like, there was a famous story in Toronto where the Rolling Stones played, like, a bar downtown years ago in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And probably only fit like a couple hundred people.
Right.
But over the years, somehow everyone was there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, oh, I was there. And, oh, really? How were you there? Because there were only 200 people, and I've met 7,000 people somehow that were actually in the place watching the Stones. I feel like the same thing's happening in Winnipeg. They're like, oh, 100,000 people are going to be downtown. No, I don't buy that.
I read that last game, Ticketmaster had released 25,000 tickets to be for free, but to go just in that space.
Why do you need tickets if it's free?
But just to get in. So it's almost like lining up. You needed tickets to get in, like almost like
Maple Leaf Square.
Exactly. So that's what they're doing. There was 25,000. I think they extended it because I thought I saw 27,000 people were allowed. Now, what it did was open the door for scalpers. You get a free ticket, and then you're scalping it outside. You want to go inside here.
Always, man. The scalpers are always going to be able to make some money off
but
that.
But it wouldn't surprise me if there was 30,000 people, but it's not 100,000. It's 30,000. And then my understanding is once they filled that area up, they were going to have other areas around town where you could have the viewing party type of things somewhere else. But
which makes no sense to me.
Why would you
want to be in a park like 7 blocks away from the rink? Why would that matter? Why don't just stay home and watch it? Or go to a bar and watch it? Why would you want to be in
a crowd there? Like that? I'm not privy to it, but I'm happy for that market to go through that process and enjoy it. Winnipeg has to have, I mean, they made a statement last game. Now Vegas is shaking off the 6-day rust, you could call it. We'll see what happens, but I think it's going to be a good game tonight. I don't think Vegas will come to play, man. It's not going to be a drubbing.
Yeah, Vegas, they deserve that benefit of the doubt.
Exactly.
Vegas is not going to keel over here.
No.
They're going to show up and they're going to push back. And it's a big opportunity, though. You go up 2-0, talk to Washington about that. Now, Washington's going the other way. They took both games out of Tampa. That feels like it should be over.
They look good, too.
They look really good. They look poised. They look like, I've said this before, the Red Sox in 04. When they finally got past the Yankees.
Yeah.
I want to say they played St. Louis in the World Series, and I think they swept them. Maybe they won in 5.
Right.
But it was like a formality. They finally got past the Yankees, and you knew they were destined for the World Series. And I'm not going to say that Washington is destined to win the Stanley Cup, but it feels like them getting through Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
It's like they're destined to get to the Cup final.
Well,
that feels like where it's going now.
I don't think people are questioning Ovi. Like,
he's been money.
Is 55 goals in 110 playoff games.
Is he in the Conn Smythe conversation? Because I haven't heard his name yet.
I think he has to be. I don't think he's a front runner.
Who else on Washington, though? Like, who would be ahead of him?
No, it's Ovi on Washington.
It's probably him on Washington, right?
It's Ovi on Washington.
So if they win the Cup, he's probably going to get it. Unless they play Scheifele, and Scheifele has 25 goals in the playoffs or something.
I think he's the guy right now. The flower. Flowers, 4 shutouts. He didn't look good last game, but you're allowed an outlier game.
He would be the guy for Vegas.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean,
starting to chip away here at what
exactly
who we believe will be the guy.
Starting to look like it, but Ovi's been outstanding. I saw a stat just before I came on the air. Tom Wilson is actually averaging the most 5-on-5 points for the Washington Capitals in the playoffs.
Really?
Yeah, above Hovey. Now, he missed three games, but you know, Wilson's been a very effective player. Like, he's, people think he's a goon. He's a really good player.
Well, he can play. Like, there's some Marchand in in that whole story.
He's not Marchand, but he's...
No, but the thing is, Marchand, early in his career, he made that big impact that first year.
Exactly.
But he wasn't putting up 75, 80 points his first 4 or 5 years in the league.
Exactly.
Took him a while to get going and find his game. I'm not suggesting that Wilson will ever hit that point.
No.
But he could be a guy that scores 55 points.
He's a better player than people give him credit
for. Right. And Barry Trotz has always said that. Like, he sees him as a guy who should be further up the lineup than, you know, a fourth line or even a third liner.
Exactly.
We're going to call Griff here in a moment, but... The Dreger Cafe today over in Denmark featured Mike Babcock. And do we have that clip? Okay, so we got this clip. I found this interesting that Babcock essentially admits that the media hysteria surrounding Matthews and Babcock and his relationship, or their relationship, factored into him going to visit him and his family, which I didn't think I would ever hear him admit on the record. This was the back and forth earlier today with Dreger and Mike Babcock.
Well, you know, what's interesting is, you know, obviously we were disappointed the way the season ended. And without media involvement, I might not have, might have went for a beer with Austin, or I might have had coffee with him, but probably wouldn't have went to his house, end up being a home run.
But what's the difference in terms of the media involvement? And you say you would have met Austin for a beer. Why does it make a difference? You just felt like because of the speculation of a rift that you needed to...
Yes, that, and... As much as he's a man, he's 20. So I just thought it was, number one, you get to see where the guy lives. You get to see him around his family. You get to see the stuff they got up in their house. You get to see, a nice glass of wine and all that too.
Of course.
But you get some nice interaction in an environment that's real comfortable.
So that's an interesting clip. And he went on to say the only thing that matters, it doesn't matter what the media is going to say collectively, and he knows you can't change the media's mind.
Right.
What matters is what the coach thinks and the player thinks. But... That, you know, kind of ends the speculation. We were talking about that last week, the idea that, well, he had a family trip planned, and hey, why not anyway? I'm in the neighborhood. Clearly, that's not the case.
I mean,
Babcock understood what people in Toronto were saying. Yeah. The idea that maybe he and Matthews were dealing with a bit of a rift, or there could be something more there, and he felt obligated in a way, or felt it made sense to get to his house and sit down and meet with him.
Nip it in the butt right away. And it's not about what the media and the fans are saying. It's the coach going, before this swirls potentially out of control or hearsay or that, fly in, meet with him, say hello, whatever, do what you need to do, and move on. And I'm sure the two of them have moved on from it. Now everyone else should.
Well, you assume that's the case. I mean, we don't know.
We don't know.
I don't know how Matthews responded. I mean, the fact that he went there...
A week
after they had their outgoing meeting. I mean,
if 10 days at least. But
yeah, I mean, it speaks to something. There's something there, and he admitted to that.
Yeah.
So, again, I'm not saying that this is going to carry over or that it's going to be a big issue come the fall, but
no,
they have to be on the same page.
Well, they
and
do.
Matthews is the man, and Babcock knows that. I mean, for the first time since he's been a part of this program, that's kind of him admitting that he's not the focal point of the team.
Yeah, Austin,
because when he first got here, it was Mike Babcock's Toronto Maple Leafs.
Yep. Now it's Austin Matthews, coached by Mike Babcock.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I mean, Austin Matthews, if Kyle Dubas, and I'm sure today was his official first day at work, as he said, he was Monday morning, was going to get after it.
Mm-hmm.
How long is it going to take to name Matthews captain, probably after a contract extension?
I would think it works in conjunction with that, don't you?
So you're going to do that this summer.
Mm-hmm. Bob McKenzie will be in studio in about 15. We'll see what Bob has to say about that.
And mm-hmm.
Play that clip for him. The Jays are off today. They dropped 2 of 3 against the Red Sox over the weekend. They're in New York, taking on the Mets tomorrow night. Here's Richard Griffin from the Toronto Star. How you doing, Griff?
Good, Brian. How are you?
We're doing well. We briefly mentioned the news from the previous hour that Major League Baseball has extended the administrative leave of Roberto Osuna, which was set to expire today. So they've extended it 7 more days to May 21st. But I don't have any reason to believe that'll be it, and he'll be back on the 22nd. I mean, do you expect this to just continue and continue till he actually ends up in court?
No, there's no way for that. You know, you're now talking into the second half of June if that's going to happen. I, I think basically they want to get it right. They still have information that they're gathering. They know it's going to be a minimum of the period that they're taking to investigate, so they could even extend it another time. But I expect that they'll have a decision before the 21st of May, and it will include a suspension of a significant length. You know, the longest that's been issued so far is 82. There's been a 15, a 30, and it'll be somewhere in the 30 to 50 range, I would imagine.
And probably retroactive to the games he missed? Like, would that be included?
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, it's like jail time already served.
Right.
Not that I know anything about that.
No, of course not. Why would you be a seasoned vet when it comes to that topic? Well, yeah, I mean, I guess that's what the Blue Jays are hoping for, too, right? Because if somehow he comes off this administrative leave and shows up in the clubhouse and Major League Baseball hasn't made a ruling, then it would be on the Jays to figure out what they're going to do and how they would use them.
Major League Baseball and the union, don't forget the amount of input that the union has in all this, because they're part and parcel of that agreement, that disciplinary agreement. So, individual ball clubs rely upon MLB to keep this thing going and to do it in, you know, a fashion where they won't embarrass themselves in the situation that you described. And I think that this will be taken care of by June 21st, but you want to get it right, but you don't want to just take that 1 week and say, okay, the week is up, let's make a decision without having all of the facts. And I think that that's what they want to do. They know it's going to be longer than 14 days, and so they're working with that.
Well, and let's be realistic here. They have to find out if there's video evidence, and if there is, will it come out? Because I think every league learned from the Ray Rice experience with the NFL. When they made a ruling before they saw the video, allegedly, before the video went public, they made the ruling. I think they suspended him for 2 games, and then all of a sudden a video comes out, and the whole world goes crazy, and they had to make an adjustment. Now, I have no idea any of the details. None of the details have come out. But you would think that's got to be the priority for Major League Baseball in terms of trying to collect all the facts, because if they issue a suspension, let's say a 15, 20-game suspension, and then a video comes out 2 weeks later, and it's gruesome, they're really going to look stupid.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, every place has video now. There's not a place that you can get away from the video cameras. And this agreement came out in August 2015 between the union and Major League Baseball. So it was after the Ray Rice incident. And they learned their lessons about, you know, taking their time to make the correct decision and making sure that all the evidence is out there. And exactly as you said, Brian, they got to make sure that there's no video that's going to come out after they've already made a lenient decision.
So Vladdy Guerrero blew up Instagram earlier today because he was at JFK on his way to Hartford, I guess. But he just pointed out, you know, I'm at JFK, and everyone's like, wait a minute, the Jays are down there too because they're playing the Mets tomorrow. I think he knows what's going on. I think Vladdy Guerrero Jr.'s a pretty savvy kid. He understands the numbers he's putting up and how much people up here want to see him play. How do you see this playing out? Because he's putting up astronomical numbers at AA, and this is a Blue Jay team who, you know, if you're being liberal, they're competing for the second wild card spot right now.
Yeah, if you're being liberal, but the photo apparently of Vladdy at JFK was one that he had taken in December on his way probably back to the Dominican, and he reposted it. There's no time stamp on it, so he's becoming quite the Twitter troll. So but I see it playing out as, you know, the Jays over time, if I put in my notebook online today the number of terrific seasons that have been had at AA by Blue Jays prospects, and it includes Carlos Delgado, and it includes a bunch of other players that have or haven't gone on to become great major leaguers. But the difference in this one is that those Blue Jays teams, especially the mid-80s to early 90s, didn't need a double-A player to come up and be a savior. And this team certainly needs someone, and Vlad is the likely candidate. I think that the decision on what they do with Vladimir Guerrero will depend on what they choose to do with Kendrys Morales, whether they end up eating his contract, because they can't trade him, they can't move him. And if they eat his contract, they will have to make a move that will keep the fans satisfied. And that would be bringing up Guerrero a little early.
Well, and that Morales deal, that's the first grenade that Shapiro and Atkins are responsible for. I mean, they can get off the hook for Martin's deal because he's not doing anything at the plate either, but Anthopoulos gave him that money. Tulowitzki was acquired by Anthopoulos, and that money is on the books accordingly because of Anthopoulos. But the Morales one, I mean, that's more personal in terms of this front office. And I have a feeling that if Shapiro and Atkins were not responsible for that contract, he would be gone by now. Because how do you keep playing him? He's been awful.
Absolutely. And, you know, that was early in the new regime. That was the first real roster move they had to make, the first signing they had to make. And I know that when you started your call-in talk show, that you probably had a couple of stinkers early on.
No, never.
Yeah.
Never. Fake news.
This is a case of at some point do they suck it up and say, yeah, that was early on. We've made some decent moves since then. Let's just cut bait and bring up the guy who's going to be our future. But I think it's going to have to be where they honestly believe that they're not going to be contending for a wild card, which a lot of us are already thinking right now.
Mm-hmm. Griff, well, maybe the future is us betting on when those young kids are going to come up with the U.S. Supreme Court overturning the federal ban on sports betting. Where do you land on that, and where do you think that's going to fit in baseball?
Well, the Players Association has already got its back up over that, over the fact. I think the danger is that if it's legal, that a lot of fans will look at a play at second base by Lourdes Gurriel throwing the ball away when they have money on the line, and they will file a complaint that this game is fixed. And now that it's all above board, now that it's all legal, people will have to pay attention to it. And I think that that's what's kept it in the background before, and it's going to be a major change with all professional sports in terms of dealing with disgruntled losers.
Well, I mean, Noodles brought up Pete Rose in the previous hour, and I mean, he's the poster boy of gambling in sports. Do you think there's a chance if it becomes legalized and more mainstream, baseball will change the way they approach Rose and specifically with Cooperstown?
Well, I think they should. But with this commissioner and the last commissioner, I don't think that they're the ones to do it. It would have to wait for another commissioner, and by that time, Pete will be too old to care. I think he's already in his late 70s, and I think that ship has sailed. You know, he's got a lot of memorabilia. He's got his bats in the Hall of Fame. They recognize the hit totals and everything. He just doesn't have that bronze bust of Pete Rose in the Hall of Fame, which is how you get those extra dollars signing autographs. So I don't really feel sorry for him, but I think he should be in. I would vote for him if he was on the ballot.
He does have the legacy of falling asleep on the Fox panel in about the 15th inning of the World Series a couple of years ago. So that goes a long way as well.
When he came to spring training with the Expos in 84, he didn't like the condo we got him because he said the satellite dish wasn't big enough. And then I found out he was watching West Coast basketball at 4 in the morning.
Awesome. Just letting it ride. In Canadian money, I'm sure, too.
Sure.
Thank you, Griff. Appreciate it.
Okay, guys. Anytime.
Richard Griffin from the Toronto Star. We got Bob McKenzie in here. We'll get Bob's take on how he feels like the NHL is going to react to this legalized sports gambling in the States. Gary Bettman's always been against it. But now, if it's above board and you can make some money, something tells me his tune might change. And game two in Winnipeg tonight, we'll tee that up next. Overdrive is delivered by Skip the Dishes. Skip the Dishes delivers the food you want from the restaurants you love. Place your order using the Skip the Dishes app or online at skipthedishes.com. It's game two in Winnipeg tonight, so the panel will be in the house on SportsCenter. And Bob McKenzie, our hockey insider, is brought to you by Finance It. And he's in studio. How you doing, Bob?
Excellent, boys. How you doing?
Doing pretty well. I mean, a big opportunity for Winnipeg tonight. Huge opportunity.
Yeah, although, you know, it's funny because I've heard a lot of people, and actually we did a Sports Center hit just now, and James was talking about it and called it a small M must win. And some other people I talked to said, now we'll find out what Vegas is all about tonight. And I'm thinking, even if they lose this game tonight, I'm really old school, and my garbage bag full of cliches is you're never in trouble until you lose one on home ice. And even if Vegas loses tonight, I would still want to see what they do in their two games at home before I declare them done.
Mm-hmm. Oh, they deserve that, don't they?
They do.
They deserve the benefit of the doubt.
For sure. But a lot of people aren't going to give it because that's just the nature of the beast. Now, I'm not sure what the garbage bag full of cliches is when you're a team like Washington who beats Tampa twice in their own building.
Like ass-beating, too.
And although there's still part of me thinks if there's a team that could come back and take two in Washington, could well be these guys. Yeah. So, but I'll tell you what, not to change subject, but man, Washington looks like they're playing free and easy. Everybody's having fun. Backstrom's out of the lineup. Ovi's smiling. He's all, you know, Kuznetsov. He's back doing the bird dance. And everybody just seems cool and relaxed. And I saw Barry Trotz's comments recently where he said, I don't know, whether we win or lose the playoffs, whether I get a cup or I don't get a cup, doesn't define who I am. You know, and I thought that was interesting. And it's almost like the team's kind of jumped on that that bandwagon, like, hey, you know, it's a game. If we win, we win. If we lose, we lose. And it's a lot more fun winning than losing. And now we're winning, and we got the pressure of Pittsburgh off our back. So let's go have some fun.
Yeah, see, I find that comment interesting because if he wins a cup, he'll be like, get that on my Wikipedia page right now. That defines me going forward, that I actually won a cup. But
you know who says winning a cup doesn't define me? People that haven't won.
Right, exactly. Yeah. It's funny how that works. It doesn't define me either.
I've told people in bars many times, it's okay that I didn't win a Stanley.
Oh, yeah. You know, when we're at the cup final, I spend a lot of time with Ray. We usually get up and we'll go for coffee, breakfast, whatever, then we'll go for a walk or whatever. And as it gets closer to the cup actually being presented, you can see Ray's agitation level gets a little higher and higher because there's inevitably some guy on either team
who's just
showed up. He's just there.
Yeah.
And for sure, and Ray will often say, well, look at that guy on this team and that guy on the other team. One of them's getting a cup and I don't have one, and I'm not happy about it.
It just so rattled. Hates that guy.
You think about it, though, there are people that have cups that are on the outer layer. Like
every team has it.
This is no disrespect. Like Colin Frazier. Do you remember that name? Like Colin Frazier is a guy who, you know, is a good, hard-working fourth-line guy. I think he's got three.
Those are the best cups. The guys on, like, the fourth line that grind their way into a bunch of cups.
Deserves them and that, but, you look at the front-line players who never won a cup. I'm going to see Jerome McGinley very soon. Here's a guy who 600-plus goals, did everything, gold medal, all of that.
Yeah. And there's some college free agent signs and starts playing in the second round of the playoffs.
And the guy who gets traded at the deadline there, who was dead in the water.
Right.
And
gets a
winning
cup. Gets a cup. Well deserved.
Exactly.
Well, I mean, let's be honest, though. That has hung over Ovechkin, I wouldn't say since day one, but for quite some time. Ever since Crosby got his cup, it was like, all right, when are you going to counter?
But he looks like a guy right now that has the weight of the world off his shoulders since the Pittsburgh series. Now, in fairness to him, he was shooting the lights out against Columbus. I mean, it's amazing to me, too, that Washington was down 2-0 in that Columbus series.
Right.
And they were, like, killing penalties to save their life in Game 3. And they had a bunch of overtime games, and they came back to win that one. And then they slayed their dragon with Pittsburgh, and here they are up 2-0 on Tampa.
What do you,
by the way, look terrible.
Well, what about the Kucherov kick? Like, we brought that up a couple of times on.
It's not a suspension because it's got a right, and nobody should have to defend somebody for kicking a guy because it's just it's like one of the things you don't do. You're not supposed to do in hockey, but it's got to rise to the level of supplementary discipline. It doesn't. Someone will give him a call, I'm sure, and say, hey, gave you a freebie on that one. But
I just said, Kucherov's a great player. But if that was Tom Wilson on Kucherov.
Oh, my God.
What are we talking about?
And, what it is Washington's got to love it because it's a visible, tangible sign of how frustrated he is and where the Lightning's heads are at right now.
You said, Bobby, it's not I think it's suspendable. Like, it's I'm not having a guy kick the air. That's dangerous garbage.
Give him a call or at least put him on the books.
Well, it's like licking. Like, it's one of those things. It's like, who kicks? Who licks? Like, what is going on here? You got guys kicking and guys licking. I mean, what is going on in the NHL playoffs?
I don't even want to fill in the blank after kicking and licking.
I know, you're careful after that, but as long as there's no big hits, I'd be real careful.
Yeah.
Asking for trouble.
Moving on.
I mean, well, you know what I'm saying, though. Like,
it's
there's all this focus about all the other stuff that we talk about constantly, and then this kind of garbage pops up, and it's like, what are you going to do? happens. No, and I don't think it should. And I think there should be penalties for it.
Yeah.
Bob McKenzie in studio. We played the Babcock clip from the Dreger Cafe. Do we have that again, Moles? Why don't we play that one more time? We played it earlier. I found this interesting. We'll get your take on it, Bob.
Sure.
Babcock, you know, admitting about how the media played a role in the meeting that he had with Matthews last week. This was earlier today, Dreger catching up with Mike Babcock.
Well, you know, what's interesting is, you know, obviously we were disappointed the way the season ended. And without media involvement, I might not have, might have went for a beer with Austin, or might have had coffee with him, but probably wouldn't have went to his house, end up being a home run.
But what's the difference in terms of the media involvement? And you say you would have met Austin for a beer. Why does it make a difference? You just felt like because of the speculation of a rift that
yes,
you needed to.
That, and as much as he's a man, he's 20. So I just thought it was, number one, you get to see where the guy lives. You get to see him around his family. You get to see the stuff they got up in their house. You get to see, yeah, a nice glass of wine and all
yeah,
that too.
Of course.
But you get some nice interaction in an environment that's real comfortable.
So that's an interesting clip. I think Dregs did a good job, too, of pushing back. Like, explain right here, because he basically highlighted, you're telling me that because of the media talking about a riff, you felt like you had to go down and meet him. And he said, yeah. Basically.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, maybe get it on record with him and his family there. I'm just guessing here because we're obviously not privy to everything that was said there. But if I were Babcock, I would want to say to them, got something you want to say? Like, over and above what we might have talked about in an exit meeting, over and above what our daily interaction is, do we have a problem that I'm not aware of? Because, you know, I don't have a problem. But, you know, that's what I would want to find out if I was the coach. But, you know, in the grand scheme of things, it's Austin Matthews. The Leafs lost. So there's going to be a lot of speculation. And, you know, when people talk about Matthews and the way he played and his body language and all of those things and started to put two and two together. But the notion of meeting with a player in the off season, Babcock's doing it all over the place. He's meeting Anderson. He's meeting Zaitsev. He's meeting Kapanen. He'll meet other guys here. But it is Austin Matthews. So, but, you know, this is what happens when you're in Toronto. This is what happens when you lose. And now the Leafs have been first round exit. Last year when there were no expectations, and this year when there were expectations. And from here on in, everything gets harder for Babcock, and it gets harder for Matthews, and it gets really hard for Kyle Dubas coming in as a general manager of a team that's already good, but now has to take the next step. Taking the next step's the really hard part. Mm-hmm. I don't want to say it's easy what they've done to this point, but it's a lot easier than what the Jets are trying to do right now.
Right.
I think the article start, or the even art, talk show every day. It's been just the big guy shows up and says there's going to be pain, and it's the famous quote, and there was pain, and then there wasn't any pain, and they got better, and it's going to be, there's, you talk about expectations. I think next year, if they make the right moves and the right transaction to bolster the roster, there's going to be serious expectations. And it's almost, I almost feel like they're all going to be on the clock now officially, and the honeymoon's over.
Yeah, true enough.
Not like Stanley Cup or bust, but...
No, but look at Winnipeg as an example. Look at the Jets as an example.
Yep.
It's a different kind of evolutionary thing because the Jets had that one playoff three years ago?
They got swept.
It wasn't really a sweep, but nevertheless, it was still, at the end of the day, they got beat 4-0 against Anaheim. They were really close games. Couple went into overtime, if I remember correctly. But the point being... They waited so long to get there. They crashed and burned in that first one, and then they don't get back for two more years. Now they get back, and now it's this juggernaut that people have already awarded the Stanley Cup to, and everybody's talking about Scheifele. Scheifele's fantastic. You know, why can't Matthews be more like Scheifele? What Matthews has got to do is got to do what Scheifele is, and you know what that is? Become 25 years old. That's how old Mark Scheifele is.
Mark Scheifele, yeah. He was a stud coming out of junior. He got sent back to junior twice at a training camp where he had played fantastic, and he went back to junior.
Well, how about Ovechkin? Ovechkin's 32 or 33, and he's in uncharted territory. He's been in the league for over a decade, and he's just getting there.
But it just gives you an idea on a guy like Scheifele. Scheifele's different than Matthews in terms of, even though one was first overall and Scheifele was seventh overall, Mark Scheifele didn't grow up as... you know, the stud player for his age in the world. And Austin Matthews did. Mm-hmm. You know, from the time he was 15, 16 years old, everybody knew in his age group, this guy's as good as he gets. Scheifele was a little under the radar going, you know, Barry got him late in the OHL draft.
Yep.
And he was sort of a late bloomer, kind of underdog kind of guy. But, you know, he's put in the time. But it gives you an idea that even 2 or 3 years ago when they got swept in the playoffs, he was, you know, 22 years old. He was still a couple years older than Matthews is. So
right.
Even though Matthews has that reputation as a franchise player and Scheifele's had to earn his as he goes along, there's still lots of time for growth here. But that's to your point, though, is what if he is 23 or 24 before? What if it is 3 or 4 years before the Leafs really hit pay dirt on something here? And in the meantime, you know, there'll be a lot of attention and a lot of focus on all those guys.
Yeah, a lot of emotional swings. And you're right. I mean, Matthews is young, but in a way, with what happened here with Babcock and the story about Babcock and then Babcock going to meet him and that all going public, kind of let Matthews off the hook in terms of the criticism he deserved based on his play.
Well, I will say,
because he was brutal against Boston.
He was not very good. And as far as their handling of him, and I said it last week, I think it was with Craig and Andy on Leafs Lunch, you have to make Austin Matthews feel like he is valued. But if you, and I don't think a regime with Shanny in it or Mike Babcock will ever do this. I've been on teams where they've given too much of the keys to a one player and they become the GM, the owner, the best player, and it turns into an absolute circus. So
yeah, I don't see that happening.
No, there. I don't. But you can't give too much power to
the thing that. If concern's the wrong word, but you track, is the people around him who, like, Marlowe's not getting younger, Kadri's not getting younger. Like, there's their core is obviously the young guys, but there is the shape around them is where there could be a drop off. And we've talked about it. JVR could be out the door, Bozak,
yep.
Komarov. What they do is they fill it with young kids. Potentially, or sign. I mean, that's up to Kyle Dubas and his management team. But the Leafs could look a lot different come September, and it may not guarantee 105 points or more.
Well, they might not, unless Kyle Dubas is going to have to get on his horse here and do some work. Because to the point, if you just take JVR and Bozak and Komarov out of the lineup, people will say, okay, no problem. Andreas Johnsson or Kapanen, more time for them to replace Komarov. But if you just take JVR's goals and Bozak's position on, you know, there's a hole at center. So you got to get those things fixed, because if you don't get them fixed, then you're not as good a team next year. And the Leafs, at this stage, to your point, can't afford to be not as good next year as they were this year. They need to be better.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll see. I mean, the offseason is right around the corner. We're only in the third round here, but things are going to get humming pretty quickly.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the draft is just over.
It feels like it's going to come now. I mean, you're hockey every night, but it's one game.
Yeah.
You're down four teams.
So. Yeah, there's only four teams playing and soon to be two, which means there's a whole bunch of teams, you know, like O-Dog's old team there that he's so proud of, Carolina. That, like, there's one guy on the team that they're not prepared to trade, Sebastian Aho. Everybody else is available. Skinner, you name it.
Skinner being interesting.
Skinner's getting moved, I would think.
Even all the defensemen, like, they got a ton of really good D.
Everybody except for Aho.
Really?
Wow. Do you imagine Noah Hanifin?
I think Falk's very much in play. I think Skinner's very much in play.
Slavin.
It's Jacob Slavin, yeah.
Like Slavin. You know, and kid, hey, listen, there's some guys, whenever they say there's only one untouchable,
right? You're not
obviously there's
purge.
A sliding scale of value where the price coming back the other way has to be off the charts. But
what the hell does that even mean, though, for a team that missed the playoffs 9 straight years? Like, does that mean we're trying to get better or we're blowing it up? What do you blow? I don't know.
Well, they got the second pick overall, right, in the draft, so I don't know. That's interesting, because then you got Tavares free agency. We got the Carlson story that's going to hang over everybody.
Are you going to go down and fire up the horn? And
I will not be asked back there again. I'm pretty sure of that.
No video?
What?
No video?
A video tribute for Jeff O'Neill?
I called the guy and asked him. I go, how come I didn't get a video tribute? And he's like, Jimmy Rutherford didn't want to. I was like, okay, thanks.
You called?
Yeah.
You call down there and be like, hey, why didn't...
But now it's new ownership. Like, you never know.
Right. He might have a whole new...
Yeah, trust me, I know this as fact. I'm not even probably allowed back in the building.
You're banned from the building. I wouldn't and Stormy the pig.
Like, usually as a former player, if you go back and you know you're in the crowd, they'll like put the camera on you.
Yeah,
and
give
like,
you
hey.
Yeah.
Not happening.
Are they going to take down your black eye picture?
What? They should.
Imagine they just wipe you clear of the record books, take everything out of the rink, everything. Anything Jeff O'Neill associated with the Carolina Hurricanes,
the fans
is gone.
Fans still love you there. When I call games there, the off-ice officials, everyone that know that they listen to the show.
Right.
They're huge fans of O'Dog.
Well, you were there for a long time.
Bartenders miss him?
Yeah. Aloha. There's lots of people missing.
Journalists, remember that story in the paper?
Dude, I got screwed in the media. There's, you know, the one story.
A trail of annoyance? Yeah.
Another one. I donated $40,000 to cancer research, and the only thing that was in the little TMZ blog, at 2 a.m., the O-Dog was bumming a cigarette off the bartender. I'm like, I just donated $40,000 to a live auction, and you reported that I bummed a dart at 2 in the morning. Who does that?
Was that fake news?
That's
or was
fake
that
news.
That's not good journalism.
That's
bad journalism.
Why would someone report that? Like, honestly.
Gutless.
Then the other one, I'm playing in the golf tournament, donated the whole weekend out of my time, and the guy reports the golf tournament. This little, I bent down to sign an autograph for a little kid, and she was like, your breath smells like beer. What did the guy write in the article? This little girl, here's so-and-so from Raleigh, North Carolina, to Jeff O'Neill. Your breath smells like beer.
This guy really had it out for you.
Wow. Tell me it was like 7:30.
Even Jimmy Rutherford called me and he goes, like, why are these people doing
that? That's uncalled for.
That's gutless.
Yeah, gutless. All right, Bob, good seeing you, man.
Right. No problem. That's awesome.
You have to spend the rest of the night with watching games.
Just put a quarter in him and he's ready to go.
Yeah, wind him up.
Yeah. Should be
good. Bums a dart at 2 a.m.
Should be good times. The Hockey Insider is brought to you by Finance It. Add a payment plan to your tool belt and break down large price tags into easy, affordable payments with Finance It. We'll tee up the games tonight. Get to our best bets. Brought to you by ProLine. Overdrive continues on TSN 2. All right, time now for our best bets brought to you by ProLine. Looking at the baseball board, I'll take Boston to continue to roll. They're back at Fenway. They will beat Oakland tonight. I'm going to bet Vegas tonight. They're paying 220.
Not a bad bet. If you watch the second half of the last game,
they got going.
They'll be going. They'll be ready to go. They got a big break. And
the Flower will be back, I think, tonight.
Yeah.
And I'm going to pick a tie in the Golden State-Houston series, which kicks off tonight. Game one tonight in Houston. Throw down 20, you can score 134. You can find my picks on Twitter at TSN 1050 Radio and get way into the game with ProLine. It's the sports betting game that lets you turn small wagers into big excitement. ProLine, get way into the game. So that series is starting tonight. The Celtics embarrassed the Cleveland Cavaliers yesterday afternoon.
That was a beatdown.
And also embarrassed the Raptors because, let's be honest, with the Pacers pushing that first series to 7, now Boston smokes them in game one. Yeah. The Raptors get swept. Like, every win by Boston, it raises the embarrassment level of what the Raptors went through.
Talk about embarrassment level. What LeBron did to those coaches yesterday?
Yeah.
What, detailing everything?
Yelling at them? Did you not see all the freakouts by LeBron James basically holding court?
Well, when he gets shut down, if he's not
performing
well, and he didn't perform well, he's got a tendency to freak out. I mean, I'm not surprised by that.
Well, is there anything Boston did to make him not perform well?
That's the question, and that's what Masai Ujiri's got to figure out. And, you know, let's be honest. With every Boston win, it makes Dwayne Casey look a little bit worse, but it certainly makes Lowry and DeRozan and all of the Raptors look worse. But this Brad Stevens is being hailed as a saint, like the greatest coach in the history of the world, of anything.
Yeah, I mean, I've never seen... I mean, players like to toot the horn of a coach sometimes, like, but this guy gets...
It's different, though, because they don't have to be asked about him. They go out of their way.
Yeah, they go out of their way.
Usually, like, Paul Maurice's thing the other night, there, you talk to the players, it's like, how much do you like your coach? And they have to say, oh, he's a great coach.
Yeah.
Not too often do you hear a guy say, he's a jerk, or...
In their media, like going out of their way saying, this guy is an unreal coach. We love him. He's prepared us for success. And I found it the most interesting part of that game, the Celtics Cleveland, was LeBron's presser afterwards, detailing the 7 points they gave up out of the half.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this guy's got a freakish, I think it's photographic memory, they've said. Or,
well, I have seen some conspiracy theories that maybe he had a sheet in front of him that he was kind of detailing.
Yeah,
the place.
I saw that.
But I don't really buy that. It seemed like he was kind of running it off the top of his head, but it was impressive. It was impressive, but at the same time, I mean, I don't know if he's the only guy in the league that can do that. And
no, a lot of players, like, we as like I after a game, I could detail plays like pretty clear in my head
because you're so into
it,
right?
But this guy is. I read an article about him recalling plays like on a Tuesday night 5 years prior. Like, that's what we did that night,
right?
And then them going to the game tape, and he's got it bang on.
Like, that's crazy.
Sounds like it's genius level of
and that's basketball IQ, right? Yes. Like, always, it's such a cliche. Like, he's got basketball IQ or hockey IQ or
apparently
football,
like,
IQ.
Steven Stamkos can recall any of his goals in the NHL.
Yeah, I've heard that. It was a TSN
feature
interview. Yeah, feature.
Where go back over the course of the whole year, at least, if not his whole career, and be like, oh, yeah, I remember that.
Impressive.
Short side, one-timer.
He scored a nice goal yesterday, but his team has to get going.
Yeah, they do. Yeah, they're in trouble.
They're in big trouble.
Down 2-0 going back to Washington.
Yeah, and I don't think enough has been made of Braden Holtby's been really good for them. Like, he hasn't had to steal games, but he's had to be really good in spurts of shortened time. There was a couple games against Pittsburgh where Pittsburgh had a really big push early on in the first period, and Holtby would stand on his head, and then Washington would get going. And Holtby's a great story because we've all focused on Ovi, focused on Tom Wilson and some of his stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Holtby didn't start the playoffs.
No, he didn't. Well, because he didn't play that well down the stretch.
He didn't play well. Grubauer
taken
his
outplayed
job,
him.
And Trotz, with a gutsy move, started Grubauer, knowing that he could go back to Holtby. But sometimes you may lose the player, too. Like, Holtby could have been
checked
a guy
out.
That said, you know what? You went with him, he's your guy, go to hell type of thing. And he didn't. He dug in and has been outstanding since.
Yeah, big one tonight in Winnipeg. I think it'll be a fun game. Yeah. I think it'll be a close game. I expect the same thing, Golden State-Houston. That'll be fun. And Jays are off tonight. So that's what you're watching in Toronto tonight.
Right.
We're out of here. Good show today, boys.
Thought it was a good Monday.
We're
going to be back again tomorrow at 4 p.m.
We'll chat then.